This week on Calling It, Matt McCarthy of 98.5 The Sports Hub joins me to talk Red Sox. I break down the upcoming fight between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor and its impact on the UFC. And I also introduce a new segment, the Other Topics segment, where we do a rapid fire of things going on in sports this past week. It's Calling It, and it starts right now. Welcome into Calling It. No Alex Barth this week, just me, Alex Lovewitz here. Alex Barth out of town, but on the line with me right now is Matt McCarthy of 98.5 The Sports Hub. Matt, thank you so much for your time.
Alex, always good to be on with you. How you doing?
I'm doing well. The last time we spoke was right around that trade deadline time. I think it was July 31st. The Yankees made a few moves that looked promising for them, and the Red Sox, there was a lack of moves made at that trade deadline, but here we are. The Red Sox have won 13 out of 16 since then, and it seems like they're running away with the AL East. What has been the difference between the trade deadline and now for the Sox?
Well, I think the additions that the Red Sox did make have really sparked them. Eduardo Nunez certainly has been a huge spark plug at the top of that lineup. You know, they've struggled so much at times offensively this year. To add a player of Nunez's quality and to have him give them what he's given them at the top of the lineup since coming over from San Francisco has certainly been one of the biggest things that's happened. And, of course, the addition of Rafael Devers from AAA. I mean, nobody saw this coming. I mean, you know, we all heard what a good hitter he was, what a top prospect he was. I don't think any of us beyond our wildest imagination could have seen the impact that Rafael Devers has had on this lineup. So you had two impact guys in Devers and Nunez to the lineup, and that has certainly changed the complexion of this team offensively. Andrew Benintendi turning things around certainly has helped as well. And Addison Reed coming on strong. I mean, he played a big role in this weekend series against the Yankees. Brandon Workman coming on strong as well. He's been excellent since returning from Tommy John and getting the call a little bit earlier this summer. So it's been the additions that they've made. They weren't as heralded as the Yankee additions, you know, the Todd Frazier, the Sonny Gray. But the additions that the Red Sox have made have really seemed to be the right fit. And I think that's really sparked this team ever since the trade deadline, or really right before it.
And you talk about Rafael Devers. The Sox have been pretty fortunate the past 4 to 5 years with the young guys that they've had and the success they've had from those young guys. Have you seen anything like this with a guy like Rafael Devers? Have you seen someone come in and single-handedly almost change the way a ball club's played?
His ability to drive the ball to the opposite field as a 20-year-old kid with the authority in which he does drive the ball to the opposite field is truly something special. I mean, guys just don't do that. I mean, even a hitter as good as Mookie Betts can't hit the ball the opposite way, the way Rafael Devers does. I mean, to have a 20-year-old kid kind of come in and change the complexion of a team is extraordinarily rare. I mean, even Andrew Benintendi, who had such an impact on them last year, didn't have the impact that Devers has had this year. Even Xander Bogaerts coming in 2013 and really solidifying a third base for them didn't have the impact that Rafael Devers is having on this team now. Hopefully he can keep it up, because I think we've gotten accustomed to this kid, you know, just being such a force in the middle of the lineup. I mean, I don't know if you can truly count on that by the time he gets second and third time through the league, but there's a lot to really be excited about. You can see he has the potential to be an elite major league hitter, because he just sprays the ball all over the field, and he does it with power. That is extraordinarily rare.
And we're talking to Matt McCarthy of 98.5 The Sports Hub. So you have Nunez, you mentioned earlier, and obviously Devers. But you also have Pedroia, who's on his way back, hopefully soon, for the Sox sake. Whose playing time is going to suffer the most once Pedroia does come back?
Well, that's going to be a really difficult decision for John Farrell. My sense is, and my hope is, that it would be Mitch Moreland. The lineup I would like to see them trot out there if Pedroia is fully healthy and performing at his normal level, would be Pedroia at second, Nunez at third, Devers is the designated hitter, and Hanley Ramirez at first base. Now, it remains to be seen if Hanley is healthy enough to play first base on a nightly basis, but I think that's their best lineup. And then, you know, you're going to mix and match righty-lefty. You're going to, you know, probably spell Devers here and there against left-handed pitching, although it certainly looks like he hasn't been phased. I mean, look at the way he's owned Aroldis Chapman ever since he came up. But, you know, Mitch Moreland is a guy who's hitting, I believe, something like 425 as a pinch hitter since 2013 or 14. the guy can give you a lot off the bench. He truly is not an everyday player. I mean, he's as good as a platoon player as you're going to get because he gives you excellent defense, he gives you a little bit of pop, and his swing is good for Fenway Park. I don't want him in there against lefties, though, given, you know, the other options that they have. And just the versatility he can give you off the bench because he's an excellent pinch hitter. He can face those righties at the end of the game, the power righties that you'll see from you know, playoff teams and teams down the stretch. And he can come on defensively at first base and give you gold glove caliber defense. So I think Moreland can really help this team off the bench if Pedroia is healthy enough. That is the lineup that I would like to see. Also, the benefit of that lineup, if Rafael Devers is mostly your DH, that's a good thing because the kid still needs to learn how to field, and we'll see if he can pick that up over the next year or two. But the glove is certainly much farther behind than the bat. I don't want him having the pressure of playing third base at a position he might not be entirely comfortable with at the big league level down the stretch into the playoffs. I'd much rather have Nunez there and just let Devers go out there and hit and mash because that is what he does best.
It seems like the past few weeks, we've seen a lot of these Dombrowski acquisitions do very good things for the Red Sox. This is a guy who was criticized pretty heavily at the beginning of the year. Have these past 3 weeks kind of repaired his image in Boston?
I think so, and they should, because Dave Dombrowski is a very good general manager. If you look at his track record, yes, he moved along from suspects. He famously once traded Randy Johnson. I'm sure he would like that one back when he was the general manager of the Expos. That being said, he also got Miguel Cabrera for Andrew Miller, who didn't really figure it out until he moved to the bullpen, and Cameron Maybin. Getting Miguel Cabrera for those guys, that's a pretty good deal, particularly given Miller's struggles, really, until he came to Boston and became a left-handed specialist out of the bullpen. He's succeeded everywhere he's gone. He did well in Montreal. He did well in Florida. He did well in Detroit. Yes, he couldn't push that team over the top in Detroit because they always had some bullpen issues. But this guy's a really good general manager. He's going to make some mistakes because he is aggressive, but I would much rather have that. I would much rather have a GM who, when he feels like I've got a good team, I can put them over the top, I'd much rather have that than Ben Sherrington, who, was the general manager for a team that finished in last place 3 out of 4 years. Yes, they won a World Series in one of those years, and they built up an excellent farm system, but I'd much rather have a guy like Dave Dombrowski in there, who has also, I think, very importantly, Alex, shown the ability to pick which prospects to trade and which prospects to keep. Right now, would you rather have Rafael Devers or Yoan Moncada? And maybe you won't be saying that 5 years from now, but it looks like Rafael Devers is farther along than Yoan Moncada at this point right now. Anderson Espinosa, that was a deal we really criticized last year. Anderson Espinosa hasn't thrown a pitch this year. Drew Pomeranz has, 13 wins for the Red Sox and has been their most consistent starter outside of Chris Sale. And, he's under contract for the next 2.5 years, too, at very reasonable terms. Dombrowski has done very well here since he's come to the Red Sox. He's, built a division winner last year. It looks like they'll be a division winner this year. Yes, he'll trade some prospects. Yes, he'll make some mistakes. The Travis Shaw trade obviously was a mistake. But for the most part, he has way more hits than misses. And I will take that any day of the week from my general manager.
And one of the moves he made this trade deadline was getting Addison Reed. Obviously, you mentioned the Travis Shaw for Tyler Thornburg deal and them getting Carson Smith. And there's been some problems in this bullpen, some inconsistencies, especially in that eighth inning role. Who do you see down the stretch winning over that setup man responsibility?
Well, that's really been Dave Dombrowski's bugaboo. If he could build a bullpen in Detroit, they would have won a World Series, maybe two. They would have beaten the Red Sox in 2013 if they had a bullpen because their starting staff was ridiculous. I mean, Max Scherzer, he traded for Max Scherzer in Detroit. So, he's got a pretty good track record. As far as the bullpen goes right now, I think Addison Reed is obviously your eighth-inning guy and obviously should be the eighth-inning guy moving forward. He is the best bullpen arm they have, not named Craig Kimbrell, so he should pretty automatically slot into that eighth inning. John Farrell might have to move him around a little bit because he might not trust some of the other guys, most notably Matt Barnes and Joe Kelly and Heath Embry, who have all regressed to the mean, shall we say. So maybe he'll have to move Addison Reed around a little bit, and I wouldn't mind that, kind of using him as your bullpen ace. If you got a big situation in the seventh inning, it should be Addison Reed. It should be your best pitcher. But overall, I think he'll slide into the eighth inning role nicely. I'd really like to see them give Brandon Workman a shot to earn that seventh inning role, because he's been excellent ever since he came back from Tommy John. And, you know, his velocity has picked up, and it looks like, you know, he may have figured things out. They love his mentality. He's a bulldog. He is not fazed by anything. You know, let's not forget, eighth inning, 2013 World Series Game 6, who was out there? It wasn't Junichi Tozawa. It was Brandon Workman, because he is a complete bulldog on the mound. Situations don't faze him. So to take over some high-leverage situations for this club, I don't think would faze him either. Let's see if he can take the job through his performance, because right now I don't think Matt Barnes or Joe Kelly or Heath Embry or Robbie Scott or Fernando Abad, I don't think any of those guys are going to take on that role. I'd like to see them give Workman a shot to see what he can do.
And Matt, before I let you go, solar eclipse today. You have any plans for the special day?
I will be avoiding the solar eclipse like the plague. Anything that will rain blindness from the sky down upon me, I am out on that. I'm going to take a hard pass on the solar eclipse. Now, people say, oh, you can watch it through your cereal box or your cardboard. You got some old shoe boxes around. You can watch solar eclipse. That's fine. You can drop all your science on me and tell me that I'll be okay. I just know that I will screw it up and I will go blind, so I'm staying the hell away from the solar eclipse today. I am out on it.
I'm going live stream personally. I don't want to look at it either. I'm in the same boat. If anything can blind you, why stare at it? That's my old saying.
Exactly. Now, if I watch it on TV, I'll be okay. But I'm going to try and confirm that with the NASA guys before I do.
Yeah, make sure you do that. You don't want to make that mistake. He's Matt McCarthy, 98.5 The Sports Hub. You can follow him at MattMcCarthy985 on Twitter. Matt, thanks for your time.
Alex, always a fun time. Thanks for having me.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back to Colin, and thank you to Matt McCarthy for joining me last segment to talk Red Sox baseball. This weekend, it's here. Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor are finally going to fight. It's going to be in Paradise, Nevada. Be McGregor's first fight ever. Obviously, Mayweather going for that 50th career win, 50-0. And like many, I'm rooting for McGregor. I understand it's extremely unlikely that he will win, but I'm trying to convince myself that it's at least possible. There's at least somewhat of a chance that he can win this weekend. I want him to win. That's simply it. I'm a fan. I enjoy watching him box, and it also goes back to my hatred towards Floyd Mayweather for various different reasons. I'm not going to get into that one. That said, Mayweather is probably the greatest defensive boxer of all time. And it's going to be tough for McGregor to even get his hands on Mayweather. I just don't see it really happening. I don't see him landing that shot. I want him to. I think it's possible, but highly unlikely. But imagine if McGregor does accomplish the impossible. Imagine if he does knock out Floyd Mayweather. Because that's the only chance I see him beating Mayweather, is a knockout or potentially Mayweather having to throw in the towel to because of injury or what have you. But if McGregor did win, it would be one of the greatest sports feats of my lifetime, probably one of the greatest in the past 30 years. It'd be McGregor, a guy who has never boxed professionally, going into a venue that he's not familiar with, and beating one of the greatest to ever do it. That would be incredible. And saying it out loud, it makes you realize why it is considered to be so unlikely. But if he did do this, it would propel McGregor to be even bigger than he already is. It would propel him to be one of the biggest, most recognizable names globally in sports. And ironically, I think this would cement the fact that the UFC has overtaken boxing. In combat sports, it's not about the skill of the fighter. It's about the appeal of the fighter. From a personality standpoint, Do you want to watch him fight? Do you want to watch him win? Or do you want to watch him get knocked out? Or even if there's a backstory there. There's something that we can all kind of cling on to. We saw it with John Bones Jones, a guy who had a year-long hiatus due to his various troubles. But this is exactly why the UFC is already better than boxing. Because they have multiple guys who are interesting, who we want to watch fight. The UFC has a guy, McGregor, who has completely taken over the spotlight. Not only in the UFC, but in combat sports in general. Again, you have that rivalry with Daniel Cormier and Jones. I always go back to that interview they both were doing. I think it was on ESPN. They were hot mic'd, and they're talking smack back and forth in the middle of the commercial break. And it's so genuine. It's hard not to get invested in that type of thing. And even look at a guy like Mighty Mouse, Demetrius Johnson. He's considered one of the pound-for-pound best fighters in the UFC, and not even many people even know of him. And that proves my point that it's not about skill, it's about how desirable you are to a fan, how interesting you are. And it doesn't help that Mighty Mouse is only 5'3", but still. It's clear that the UFC is a combat sports fan's dream. It's more legitimate, if you ask anyone who's been in a street fight. It's just as entertaining, if not more so. There's more possibilities. And you have the personalities that are coming out. Nate Diaz, another guy who everyone loves to see fight, who's brutally honest. They got a number of those guys. Who's that guy in boxing right now? I don't know. It's stale. The fight of the year is between one of the best to ever put on boxing gloves and Floyd Mayweather. And I'm sticking by that, by the way. About a month or two ago, I said that Floyd Mayweather was a top five boxer of all time. My co-host Alex Barth dismissed that. I'm sticking to it, though. I think that Mayweather has proven that he is a top five fighter to ever do it. Probably not the best. I'll put Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali over him, pound for pound. But he's one of the best to ever do it. No doubt. Storied career. He may be 41, 42, what have you. But he is the best to ever do it. It's a fight between him and a UFC fighter. Not a boxer, a UFC fighter. Who's a fight promoter's dream. This is too gimmicky for me to get behind. As a boxing fan. If you're coming from a boxing fan perspective, this is the most gimmicky thing you could even think of. As a UFC fan, you've got to be pumped. Because again, this is going to propel the UFC. I think regardless of what happens, this propels the UFC. As long as McGregor doesn't get his ass kicked, this is going to propel the UFC, which I don't see happening. This Saturday is a funeral for boxing. It's a funeral for the sport of boxing. When Floyd leaves, this sport will suffer immensely. Again, who's the guy? There's no one who's nearly as hateable as Floyd Mayweather. And, you know, that means there's no one nearly as marketable as him. You want to watch the villain get beat up. You also want to watch the hero win, but that's usually the underdogs. There's no villains in boxing, really, that I can think of that's mainstream enough to propel the sport of boxing to where it once was back in the 80s and the 90s, even the 60s and 70s. When they had guys like Foreman and Ali and Frazier. You don't have that anymore. It's not a mainstream sport. I don't see anyone coming in to replace Mayweather as the face of boxing. No one's going to get under people's skin like a Floyd Mayweather. And the UFC has many of those guys. And women. Which boxing doesn't have. Multiple. This is going to be the turning point, if it already hasn't happened. The UFC is becoming more and more mainstream, and Conor McGregor is the perfect example as to why that is. So my prediction for this Mayweather-McGregor fight, Mayweather's going to win in a decision, probably unanimous decision. I think it's going to go all the way. And he's going to do what he always does. He's going to be very passive, very defensive, and play technically and box technically sound. McGregor isn't going to get a good shot on him. Again, you're going up against the best defensive fighter to ever do it. I don't think McGregor is going to be able to upset him, to do the impossible. It's just not going to happen. There's too many boxing experts out there saying it's not going to happen for me to say that it will. Is it possible? Hey, if anyone gets a good shot on a fighter, it's possible. McGregor clearly has the striking ability, but this is new territory for him. He's doing this for the money, not because he realistically thinks he can win. If this is in the octagon, we know what would happen, but it's not. Therefore, McGregor is going to lose this fight. It's going to be Mayweather all the way. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, I'm going to do a quick hits type of segment, the other topic segment, where I go through multiple things in the world of sports that happened this past week. Stay with us. This is Callin' It, presented by Snap Call Sports.
Callin' It is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back to Callin' It. Alex Lubwitz back with you. And I have a new segment I'm introducing. It's something I did on my old show, The Boston Beat. Don't know if it'll continue or not, but figured why not introduce it to the Callin' It listeners. It's the other topic segment. Pretty much topics that I didn't want to dedicate a full segment to. So I'm splitting it up, doing a rapid fire type of segment here. And the first item on our other topic segment is Roger Goodell on the verge of signing a 4-year extension with the NFL to remain commissioner through, I think, 2024 would be the date. And if you didn't think the owners didn't care about the players, you should probably start coming around to that. It's the reality. You saw D. Smith, the NFLPA president. He had an interview last week in which he said that he pretty much thinks a strike, a lockout, is imminent. It's something that is going to happen. I agree. 2020 is when the next CBA is up. We saw the last time that they had to sign this. Robert Kraft and Jeff Saturday had to get together and hug on national television for a deal to be done. And Roger Goodell is a lot to blame for why one wasn't done, because he's a puppet to the owners. It's really the owners more than anything. Robert Kraft's included in that. There's no doubt that the NFL players are treated worse than any other professional athlete in sports right now, out of the big four leagues, that is. And they want some respect. They want some security. I get that. The owners aren't having it, and I think they're willing to hold out, and seems like the players will be too. Will it be a lockout, a strike for an entire season? I don't know, but it's going to happen. And Roger Goodell will apparently be there. I don't know what it's going to take for this guy to be kicked out and for them to give it to someone else. But the reality is, if they do kick him out, get someone else in there, it's going to be the same thing. They do work for the owners. It's not Roger Goodell that you hate. It's the idea of Roger Goodell that you hate. He's someone who just represents the most powerful people in the world and doesn't care really about the players and what they go through. And guess what? The next guy up won't be the same. That said, we will see a lockout. We will see a strike. And it's going to be a boring fall in 2020, I'll tell you that much. Next on the agenda, umpires wearing a white wristband in solidarity. You saw the Charlottesville strikes. This has nothing to do with that. It's not the Jews. It's not African Americans who are the victims. It's umpires. Angel Hernandez, that's the guy. Ian Kinsler went off on him a few weeks back, saying that he should quit umpiring. If you've ever seen a game umped by Angel Hernandez, you'd probably agree. The thing with him is he's a guy who looks for confrontation with players. You've seen him do it in games. You've seen him rile up players and get them to get to the verge of being ejected. That's not what you want from an umpire. They need to know their place. Joe West wearing the wristband, that's the one that went viral. That's a picture of him. That went viral. Guess what? Umpiring in the league this year has been brutal. It's been horrible. It's been worse than I've seen in a very long time, and they deserve to get bitched at from time to time, especially with the amount of money they're making. You want to talk about NFL players being treated horribly? MLB umpires are paid probably more than any other official in sports. I'd say they definitely are. So I'm not going to feel bad for these umpires who get yelled at. They get paid a lot of money, and they don't do that great of a job a lot of the time. Next on the agenda, Anquan Boldin retires. He was on the Bills. I think he looked around and saw what was going on there, and he decided that, you know what, I have a Hall of Fame career already. I don't think I need to be here. He made a decision that was probably the smart one. He's 36 years old, a guy who's received a hit or two in his days. And he's someone who will be a Hall of Famer eventually. I think it's something like 13,000 career receiving yards, over 1,000 career receptions. A guy who has like 80 career touchdown receptions. He deserves to hang up the cleats, and he also deserves to be spared from a horrible season that the Buffalo Bills are bound to have this season, especially given the trades they've made. Not to say that they're bad moves. They wouldn't have made it far anyway, but why be a part of a rebuilding franchise when you really got nothing to play for but just playing itself? Next one up, Lakers are being investigated for tampering in regards to Paul George, Indiana Pacers, filing those charges. And Magic Johnson, surprise, surprise, he's at the center of this investigation. He's a guy who strikes me as not the smartest person out there in regard to front office executives in the NBA. I remember he told Luke Walton that they're going to get the number one pick in the draft, and Luke Walton went on national television and said it. And it was just Magic being natural, cocky Magic, very, very charismatic guy. But I just feel like he does some stupid things once in a while that kind of highlights that he's not a great basketball mind. For me, it makes me worry if I'm a Lakers fan for their future. Will they be able to get over that hump and be a team that will fight for an NBA Finals title within the next 5 years? A lot of that stems on if their young guys contribute, but it also stems on the competency of their front office. Is Magic Johnson the competent guy that he needs to be? I don't know. I think he's more of the face than anything, but he needs to know his boundaries, and obviously he's still learning in that role. Last but not least, today it's the solar eclipse. We hope to have this episode out right around when the solar eclipse is at its peak. That's around 2:30. And I will be watching it on TV. I'm not going to go outside. You heard it with Matt McCarthy. That's not something that I want to do. Blindness isn't really my thing. So I'm going to be watching it on the comforts of my television on whatever channel. And I'll look outside, see the shadows, whatnot. I'm not looking up, though. I'm buying in. It's cool. It's pretty cool. I'm not as hyped about it as most people. You know, it's a natural phenomenon, something I don't think we'll see in our lifetime. I'm not sure when the next time is. I'm assuming it's going to be another 80 years or something. Who knows? But I don't think it's as cool as people make it out to be. I think it's a shadow. That's essentially what it is. So you guys can look up at it through your glasses that really you won't be able to see anything. I don't understand how it works either. Some people do it through a cereal box. You see the reflection on a piece of paper. All you're seeing is light. You're not seeing the sky. You're not seeing what it actually looks like. I don't see the appeal of it personally. So that's why I'm watching it on a television in the comforts of my living room. I'm also excited to see the idiots that might go blind. I don't know if they're just trying to scare people, but there's definitely going to be a couple dumbasses out there who look directly at it, and they're going to have sun floaters for the rest of their life. So that's going to be fun. I'll feel bad for them, I guess, but like they warned you. Don't look at it. And there's people who are like, I'm going to look at it. Who cares? All right. I mean, it's your life, and it's going to happen. It's bound to happen. I'm just waiting for the Channel 5 exclusive on little Billy who looked up at the sun when there was the solar eclipse, even though he was told not to. So again, watch it in your living room. Do not go outside and blind yourself. That'd be a horrible idea. This has been Calling It. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Alex Barth will be back in the studio. Won't be doing it solo. You'll be spared from my solar eclipse rant. And you can follow us on Twitter @CallingItPod. Follow us on SoundCloud as well, Calling It Podcast. And subscribe on iTunes. So you can get all of our episodes and it'll download automatically. So your Monday afternoon, you'll be able to listen to it on your way home from work. Follow me on Twitter as well, at Alex_Lubowitz. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, a game within the game.